Rachel Page, Kira, you good then? Hillary Grace, you good then? Laura and Eric, you good?
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming out. Everyone, please rise for the pledge to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I will ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Ms. Francie Smith.
Present.
Dr. Renix. Ms. Squiatek.
Present.
Ms. Leon. Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Plum.
Present. Thank you. Public hearings prior to the consideration of tonight's regular agenda items. Council is going to have two public hearings. Public hearing number one. The first will be to accept public comment on amendments to the zoning ordinance regarding solar energy devices. And then following that, we will have public hearing number two. The second public hearing will be to accept public comment to discuss and consider the allocation plan associated with the strategic plan to address homelessness. This plan was a subject of the Joint Public Safety and Community Development Committee meeting held earlier, at which time plan recommendations and implementation were presented. The plan is part of a comprehensive approach to provide necessary sheltering and services to those who are homeless in Bethlehem and the greater Lehigh Valley region. It involves funding from the Department of Housing and Urban Development and the American Rescue Plan Program. In connection with the first public hearing, there are two communications, which the clerk will read, starting with communication 6A.
A memorandum from Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, dated October 26, 2022. City Planning Commission voted unanimously to recommend that City Council support the zoning text amendment, Article 1318.29, Solar Energy Collection Systems, with several edits. To clarify the definition of historic, to clarify the maximum permitted height, to add setback or screening conditions to ground-mounted solar energy systems, as well as minor editing throughout.
And then also communication 6B.
Memorandum from Jillian Seitz, Senior Community Planner, Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, dated October 12, 2022. Lehigh Valley Planning Commission Comprehensive Planning Committee reviewed the proposed zoning ordinance amendments to solar energy devices. These amendments support renewable energy and diversification of sources to reduce climate change impacts. The Lehigh Valley Planning Commission supports the City of Bethlehem's goal of a sustainable and climate resilient community and thanks the City for continuing to demonstrate evolution and adaptability of government throughout zoning ordinance amendments.
The first public hearing is called to order concerning the amendments to the zoning ordinance regarding solar energy devices. I will start by recognizing a representative from the administration.
Thank you. I'm Darlene Heller, the Director of Planning and Zoning for the City of Bethlehem. And your city clerk just read off a couple of the pieces of correspondence. I did want to go through a little bit of the history of how we got here. Lynn Rothman is here. She's the chair of the EAC. I'm not sure, frankly, if any of the other EAC members are here, but the EAC did put together this draft. They worked with my office, Planning and Zoning, also with permits and fire. So there were a few different renditions of this. We went over it with really a fine-tooth comb, and I think the thing that really started the whole process was the fact that we had a requirement in here that there was a 3-foot setback from each edge of a roof, and many of the residents that wanted to have roof-mounted solar panels were struggling with being able to do that in an efficient way. It just wasn't efficient enough for some people to put them on their roofs. And so we touched base with the fire department, and we took a look at the code, and we were able to make some changes to eliminate that. And while we were doing that, we went through the other provisions of the ordinance to look at. So this was reviewed at a committee meeting. I believe it was Human Resources and Environment Committee back in August. As you heard, Lehigh Valley Planning Commission signed off on this. They were very supportive. This was also reviewed at the October Planning Commission meeting, and they also supported it, but they had some minor revisions. And I do want to be clear, the draft that you've got in your packets, I apologize, it's not actually the final draft. So I can go through the amendment a little bit just to touch on what the larger changes were. But I just want to be clear that we'll get to you a cleaned up draft prior to your first vote, your first reading. What's attached to our memo is first the existing ordinance, the one that's in the zoning ordinance now. And if you turn to page 4 of that, you can see at the top of the page it says that it shall be amended to read as follows. And there's a cleaned up version of that. The definition section on that page was added as a part of the EAC's draft. We did remove the Planning Commission and the Planning Commission solicitor determined that we should really remove the fifth definition for solar related equipment. It's a definition that really doesn't appear anywhere in the ordinance. It just didn't seem to be necessary or practical to have it in there. So in the final draft, we'll take that out. If you turn to page 5, there's some minor editing that the Planning Commission looked for. Some of it was punctuation and capitalization and things like that. But also, point number 5 on that page was added by the EAC. And there were a couple of provisions in here that tried to protect trees. Certainly, if there are trees that provide shade over a roof, you know, solar isn't going to be a great option there, but they do try to encourage that trees should be retained whenever possible and only removed if it's really necessary. Under number 6V or 5, again, this is a new provision added by the EAC. They encourage, we're not requiring, but they encourage people to get easements from their neighbors so that in the future a tree isn't planted or a building isn't built or something happens to create shade over your solar panels in the future. So that was added. At the very bottom of the page, number 7, we did tweak the wording of this. The prior version only talked about compliance with the Uniform Construction Code, but we added in the fire code and noted that the plans have to be reviewed not only by permitting but also by fire. And that's how we're able to remove the 3-foot requirement that originally started this conversation. The fire department does have some flexibility in how they can review the installation of solar panels. In number 9 on that next page, page 6, we were more specific about what historic resources are and when the review is required by HARP and HCC. The language notes that we want to minimize the intrusion of solar panels in the historic districts, but that they are permitted. The goal is just to sort of minimize the view of those. Lower on the page, under D, setbacks and height restrictions, there's another provision that the Planning Commission added. It's not in the version that you have in your packet, but they did add a provision for buffer requirements if in a residential zone someone wants to put in ground-mounted solar panels. So we have buffer requirements in the zoning ordinance. We would just refer to the existing buffer requirements. And then on the last page, page 7, it was decided that item E, abandonment and removal, would be completely removed from the ordinance. We have a property maintenance code, and that really defines what is a nuisance. And if there was some concern that if solar panels were not being used but were still usable, operable, that if someone came along later on to purchase them, we would still want them to be used. We don't want them to be removed if they don't have to be. So only if they are somehow becoming a nuisance, that's when they would be removed. And we have nuisance codes to address that. So those are the bulk of the changes. Like I said, for the minor editing, et cetera, we'll make sure that we get you a full cleaned up version as soon as we can to follow up, so you have that before your next meeting. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Heller, for the clarification and going over where the changes are going to be. I'll open it up to members of council for any questions or comments. Ms. Cueta?
Hi. Maybe I'm just not understanding something, but on page 3, number 11, it still says a minimum of 3 feet setback. Have we reduced the number of edges that the setback is required to?
Well, what this sends to you is, so usually you have, sometimes you get a new ordinance where it has strikeouts and things like that. This draft isn't written that way. It shows the existing ordinance on the first three pages, pages 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
And then at the top of page 4, it says that current version should be changed to, amended to read as follows. And then the new version is there. So it is a different format than what you typically see. But the language that you're pointing out is the language that really became problematic.
Right.
Initially.
That's why when I saw it, I was like, I don't, okay.
No, you're correct.
I think I prefer to see my amended ordinances as amendments within the ordinance.
We can change
if
that.
If at all possible.
It is easier to read the other
Thank
way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Dr. Bailey.
I just wanted to thank you and Ms. Rothman and the work of the EAC for this good work. Thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? I'll just echo what Dr. Van Wert said. I know these things aren't things that are just written up in a day. I appreciate the volunteer work of Ms. Rothman, all members of the EAC, and all other volunteers who support the EAC in other ways. And I appreciate giving us the presentation, Ms. Heller. At this time, I will open it up to public comment. So again, this is commenting on what we just went over, the amendments to the zoning ordinance as they relate to the solar energy devices. So I'll go around the room if anyone wanted to make comment on these amendments specific to solar energy devices. Now would be the time. I'll start on the left side of the room. The lectern is yours, Ms. Rothman.
I just want to thank all the city departments for working with us and council for your consideration. I just want to make it clear that 3-foot setback, the reason it has to deal with the fire department is it's for fire safety. If emergency personnel have to get up on a roof during a fire, they need to be able to walk around. But to have 3 feet on every side isn't always necessary because you don't have solar panels over the entire structure. You wouldn't have it on the north facing side. And the fire chief said he's happy to review this on a case-by-case basis. And I guess another change too, it talked on the old version about the visibility of panels on different slopes of roofs, and there was another change where it's really only applicable in the historic district or historic structures, that type of thing, not in other areas. But otherwise, I thank Ms. Heller and Chief Baer and Michael Simonson for working on this with us, and I hope that it will pass. Thank you.
Thanks for coming out, Ms. Rothman. Any other comments as it relates to solar devices on the left? I will turn to the center. Is there anyone who would make comment on solar devices in the center?
Hi, good evening. My name is Alan Loker. I live at 438 High Street. I'm also the president of the BHDA. I recognize, first of all, the benefits of solar energy. And I know most people here are here for the homelessness prevention discussion, so I'll make my comments briefly. The visibility of the panels and the related equipment is a concern from the standpoint that no guidelines are provided in the ordinance spelling out matching the architectural elements in terms of color, size, and texture, and they should be. Glare is recognized as a concern, but there's no methodology spelled out in the ordinance about how that's being addressed. And there are glare assessment protocols that should be followed and should be more specifically referenced in the ordinance. Height, I'm not really sure what solar collection devices would be that would extend 15 feet above the maximum height, whether that applies in the historic district or not, but height is a concern, particularly because the use of a flush-mounted solar panel system on a steep slope is not mandatory. It is to be used, if at all possible, but quoting from what I read, the ordinance does permit devices to be visible if there is no alternative without major loss of the efficiency of the system. Would tree removal be permitted if it was interfering with the operation of a solar panel system in the historic district? That's a concern because the BHDA has a very aggressive grant program where we provide money to help homeowners remove trees that need to be removed for safety considerations, then we provide money for them to plant the tree. I don't think we should be rewarding people for removing trees to permit a solar energy system to function more appropriately and more efficiently. The amendment does recognize that the design of the solar system shall be evaluated for approval by the appropriate authority, and it does mention the HARB, and it also mentions HCC, if applicable. I want to give you one brief example about why I think HARB should be involved in assessing any application for a solar system to be utilized in the historic district. And that has to do with the gas meters that were installed by UGI over the past year. Now, I recognize that HARB has no jurisdiction telling UGI where to put their meters. But the decision where to put the meters was left entirely to the homeowner in most cases. Some cared, some didn't. And if you drive around the historic district, you're going to see gas meters in all kinds of places. Why is that an issue? Because HARB did not have the ability to at least prescribe guidelines to the homeowners about how to screen these gas meters. And with respect to solar energy systems on roofs in the historic district, they should. There should be guidelines that are proposed by HARB, and I do have a handout that I will leave with you, sample guidelines for solar systems in historic districts. This ordinance shouldn't be acted on for any kind of final approval until HARB has the ability to develop guidelines that make sense for solar systems in historic districts. And that's about all I have to say. So thank you very much for listening. And I will leave these handouts with whoever you would like to take them.
Yeah, we'll pass them out up here. Thank you, Mr. Looker. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak on the amendments to the zoning ordinance regarding solar energy devices? Seeing none, the ordinance is going to be placed on the November 15, 2022 council agenda for first reading, and second reading and anticipated enactment will be at the December 6, 2022 council meeting. We're going to segue into our second public hearing, now called to order, concerning the allocation plan associated with the strategic plan to address homelessness. Again, I will start by recognizing a member of the administration.
President Clown, do you mind if I stay here? Is that fine?
Wherever you're comfortable. As long as you have a microphone in front of you, Ms. Collins.
I do. All right, well, we are here to take public comment on the city's home ARP allocation plan. And I'll just give some brief background on this funding stream and how we got here on the timeline and what the process looks like. So HOME is the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development Home Investment Partnership Program. ARP is the American Rescue Plan. So the City of Bethlehem is designated by HUD as a community development block grant entitlement community, and we are a home participating jurisdiction. That means that we get recurring allocation of funding based on our population and community need, levels of poverty, things like that go into the equation. These funds support low to moderate income populations in a number of ways through services, through funding for facilities projects, and also housing programs. So then during the pandemic, HUD created an additional allocation of funds for both CDBG and home programs. So what we're talking about tonight is the allocation of the pandemic-specific home dollars that the City of Bethlehem received, and that's $1.4 million. We are required, as we are with any HUD grants, to put together an allocation plan for how those funds are to be spent. Then we hold a public hearing, we have a public comment period that is open, we receive, take comment, potentially amend the plan, and then City Council will eventually receive the plan to vote on it. So we are at the public hearing part of that process. A couple things. We are at a really great place compared to other jurisdictions because we are also working on our strategic plan to address homelessness. So the home ARP funds can be used in a couple of ways. One, and the way that we intend to use them, is for purchase and development of non-congregate sheltering. That's one of about four enumerated possible uses for home ARP funds. So because we have been working on the strategic plan to address homelessness, and a lot of the work that we are doing in that strategic plan involves engagement and assessment of community needs, it got us to the place where we are very confident that the City of Bethlehem's role in the pipeline, in the housing pipeline, in addition to being at the affordable housing end and the supply side and all those efforts, also is at the front end, is in emergency sheltering. There is not a permanent Lehigh Valley overnight emergency shelter. We have an obligation as a city to make sure people are not dying in the cold. So we've done all this work and done all this engagement, done all this analysis, and that fits directly right into the HUD sort of categories of requirements that you've got to fill out in this very, I hate to say bureaucratic sort of way, you've got to put these plans together. But so we've got all of that. We are well ahead of some other communities. We are hoping to get this plan finalized and submitted to HUD. Then they have about 30 days to review it, and that will then free up the funds once it is approved. So I will say we've worked on this internally with our Deputy Director of Community Development, Sarah Cetullo, and our Housing and Community Development Administrator, Robert Fedoni. They put in a lot of time. We drafted up the plan. There was a pre-comment period, and then we distributed the hard copies of the plan and also have had it up on the website. So if anybody does not have a copy, didn't receive it through those channels, I have a couple extra copies here as well. As I noted, our intent is to use the $1.4 million to support activities related to the acquisition, construction, or rehabilitation of structures to serve as non-congregate shelters. So I think that's all that I have. I'm happy to take comments, and that's it.
Thank you, Ms. Collins. I will turn to members of council for any questions or comments. Tweeta.
Thank you very much for sharing this information with us, and I think it's a perfect use of the funds in terms of the work that's gone into the plan to address homelessness. This is a very defined need and fits very much within the guidelines, so I appreciate your efforts. That's all.
Any other questions or comments? Councilwoman Ramsey Smith.
Thank you for this information. And I agree this is a real need that we have to meet within our community. I guess I just need to understand or clarify the role of the consultant, because the consultant did a plan to address homelessness. And I'm just wondering, I know they gave us different options and financially what the difference would be between, you know, current structures or building structures, but did they look at any current structures as a possibility within the community? And if so, did they have recommendations? Because I know some people, entities within the community have been looking at some structures for a homeless shelter.
Yeah, first I'll just clarify, because I had said this to somebody in an email who asked, there's a couple different plans floating around. So the strategic plan to address homelessness, a final public version of that hasn't been submitted yet. So that gets at what you're talking about, the more specific property, cost assessment, you know, cost analysis. Those details are in the wheelhouse of the consultant who did the strategic plan to address homelessness. The more perfunctory allocation plan has to set out, you know, engagement on community needs and an assessment of needs, and then just more generally it says, you know, that we're using these funds on, as I said, what's the phrasing here, construction, acquisition, or rehabilitation. So this plan itself doesn't have, you know, any specifics on, you know, properties or locations. It's not required to have that. So we don't have that in this plan. But as far as the work of the consultant, I mean, we have been, from the beginning, talking internally and talking with them and looking for any opportunities that we have to basically take control of property. And that's been a part of the conversation. It's been part of the assessment, and it's going to continue to be part of the assessment as we move forward.
Okay, thank you. So, because I know when we had the committee meeting, the Baker did the presentation. So
correct.
That was, and so I guess my understanding from that committee meeting was they did the presentation, and I felt like they were sort of done with their part of the plan. But I thought in the contract they were going to continue all right through the acquisition of a property or the building.
We're still working with them. Yeah, they haven't finished their work with us yet. So we still have to finalize and publicize the plan, but we also are working with them on the more property specific side of things.
And my only other question within this, I know that there was a regional roundtable, I think on July 18th.
Yes, okay. There was.
And I guess I'm just wondering, I don't know, I don't see any council people listed, and I don't recall hearing anything about that. I guess I'm just wondering why. I mean, I see, you know, a lot of their elected officials and different entity service providers and institutions, which is great, but I just don't recall this.
Yeah, from the cities and from the counties, we invited folks who are in, not the legislative folks, so we didn't invite, you know, council members from any of the cities or the counties. We just invited, you know, the mayors of each city. We invited the county executives and whatnot. So that was
no council members were invited. Okay.
So to my knowledge, sure. I don't think that was the focus of.
I just wonder why not? Because I think that would have been a good thing to have council members invited, at least, especially Bethlehem council members, since this is our initiative.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we've been trying to have as many conversations as possible publicly and talking about this effort during this committee meeting. I believe we had council members who were involved in the process at various stages, including when we were selecting a consultant and putting together the whole program. But I take your point, and you know, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? I'll start with Ms. Leo.
I just had one question. Thanks for clarifying the difference between the allocation plan and the strategic plan. Is there like another plan?
I believe those are the two primary ones right now.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. Right. Sure.
Just quickly, so these home and ARP funds are for capital acquisition, construction management. And I'm trying to remember, but I think I recall that in your presentation, the operating costs of the projected size, you know, lots of variables out there that could change this, is around $700,000 a year. But I'm not clear where that would come from. I know we probably would apply for, you know, CBDG and all that good stuff, but what is just the general approach from the administration for the annual operating costs of this?
Yeah, I don't think we have finalized exactly where, you know, each pot that we're looking at. Michael Baker helped us kind of narrow down the different federal funding options. So we looked specifically at the public options, one of which was CDBG. We also looked at, we are not an ESG entitlement community. That was one of their recommendations as well. That would go into the, you know, the potential pot of federal funds. But yes, the home ARP dollars are not for operational costs. So we're just at the acquisition stage. But we haven't, you know, done like a line by line cost to that funding source yet. Because I think, you know, there's a lot of moving parts and sure. Partners and public and private partnerships. So I think there are a lot of different opportunities for funding.
Will the kind of the basic approach to the operating costs be presented to council as part of this decision?
It's not part of this allocation plan, and you know, there's really it wouldn't be part of the decision point on home ARP. No.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? So I'll just say before I open up to public comment, I wasn't here, of course, for the last committee meeting.
Congratulations on your baby.
Yeah, thank you. But that being said, I know there's, as was mentioned, a lot of different conversations going on, and truth be told, I wasn't able to watch the video of the last committee meeting yet, but I do appreciate you just kind of going over earlier on that some of this is just kind of the bureaucracy of it all. Like when dealing with HUD, just my conversations with Mr. Vadomi and others in the department, I know there's a lot of reporting, a lot of kind of steps along the way. So like a lot of things that we do here within city government, it's not just a one-step process. It's not something that happens overnight. It's not the first draft is the final copy. So I know this is just sort of one of those points along a long timeline. So I appreciate where we are today, but also, as was mentioned, I appreciate council being kept informed, invited to the table in certain circumstances, and really just as we make decisions, you know, I look forward to more information coming along as it's available and when it's appropriate. So thank you, Ms. Collins. Any other input from council before I turn it over to public comment? All right, so now we're gonna have public comment again for this public hearing. So this is solely about the allocation plan associated with the strategic plan to address homelessness. So I know some people have signed up to speak on homelessness. Now would be the time. I'll go around the room, starting on the left again.
Jeffrey R. Zettelmoyer, 1304 East 6th Street in Bethlehem, PA. 18015. I come to the dais tonight to let you know that I am the current president of the Housing Opportunities Movement Board here in Bethlehem. We are a resource for this type of strategic plan as well as low and moderate income citizens housing. I'm not going to blow my own horn because I wasn't on the board when a lot of this happened, but we were able to acquire 4 units on Montclair. We wrote down the cost of the construction by $10,000 per unit. The units were built at $78,000, and we sold them at $88,000. We had 4 units on 8th Street that cost $175,000. The city's CDBG department gave us $50,000 per unit to write down the costs, and we sold them at $175,000. We also had 4 or 5 housing rehab units that we acquired through Attorney Haber, who was losing his shirt on it, so we bought it out from him. How did we come into being? Back in 1981, the city of Bethlehem and HUD sold land at Park Ridge Housing Development. A total of $492,000 was secured through the sale of those 27 acres. A board was formed by the Bethlehem Housing Authority, and I could tell you the members, but I won't belabor the point, but for 12 years they worked in anonymity. Nobody knew what they were doing, nobody cared. After a while, they had rolled all of their money through strategic investment close to $600,000, and then they said, well, we got to do something with it because HUD wants us to do something with HUD's money. So that's how we came to be. We are a HUD-certified CHOTO organization founded 24 CFR.597. And we have been working in the city, and we also have been working with the administration. The administration is a subgrantee of ours through contract, and we have up to $12,000 available to any low and moderate income citizen in the city of Bethlehem to apply for those funds. We also have developed some forms. I understand from the last mayor's confab on the south side, forms have not been done yet, but we have our own, so if you want to get together with us, we can show you what HUD approved for us, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It will conform with fair housing, because I was a former fair housing officer, so I know what I was talking about there. I'm also a HUD-certified housing counselor. Never disappeared. I called HUD about 4 years ago, and they said, Jeff, once you have it, you always have it. So I am also a HUD-certified housing counselor, which I can very well fit into this role. I also will take some bows here, because I was the first one, along with Dave DeRemer, to raise the issue of homelessness in this city back in 1982. We put together a consortium of churches, and as a result, you now have New Bethany on the south side. And there was a lot of tugging and a lot of pulling that went on at that time, but we took care of the homeless problem because we had an active community housing resources board that was our grassroots support for what we were doing. We reached out to the NAACP, the Board of Realtors, the Chamber of Commerce. I could go on, nauseam. We had 19 different organizations working with us on our Community Housing Resources Board. The intent of the Community Housing Resources Board was it was a HUD-funded agency. For 3 years running, we received HUDs directly for the CHRB, and the main purpose was to make sure that the Realtors in Bethlehem were complying with a voluntary affirmative marketing strategy that was developed by HUD to root out redlining and housing fair housing issues. So I stand ready to serve the citizens of Bethlehem once again, as I have for 40 years in this community, and I hope somebody finally calls me and talks to me about what we can do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zettelmore. Anyone else on the left who wants to make comment regarding the allocation plan to address homelessness? I will move to the center. Anyone?
My name is Anna Zavaruka, 341 B Spring Street. Wonderful to hear all of that, because I'm all for this program's finding cost-effective ways of dealing with homelessness, but it seems like we already have a pretty good resource, which is great. And he addressed some of my concerns that when we move forward, we don't forget, you know, I find sometimes we want to solve a problem, but we have to be equitable. So to me, the space you have to find has to involve green space. You know, we don't want, because somebody's homeless, okay, we'll give you a little box to live in. And I find that, you know, really disingenuous. Homeless people often, I think, like to see, you know, like to be outside, so they should have maybe accessible garden spacing and things like that. You know, why not make it an ideal space for these people if you're really concerned about changing their mindset and how they're going to approach and embrace what we're trying to do for them? Because, you know, we don't want to be patronizing. We want, you know, treat these people as dignified citizens. And so I think that's a concern moving forward. The other concern is the fact that I don't feel that the city of Bethlehem is really doing enough to have low income entry level housing. I mean, we've got that armory that just finished being built. You know, rents are crazy. They're only one room, two bedroom situations. We have the other place across, you know, where was the masonry, the Mason, okay? Also, you know, all rentals. There's another proposal we talked about that's going down, was that Easton or Eaton Avenue? I mean, these are all out of reach. There's no entry level housing for people here. Who's moving into the armory? These are people from Philadelphia. Nothing wrong with people from Philadelphia, but they're saying this is a bargain compared to Philadelphia. And, you know, where are the people that live in Bethlehem, where are they supposed to live? And we also have to be a little bit more proactive. Like, we okay these buildings. Personally, I think they're aesthetically ugly. I mean, you know, like if I was had an erector set, I could build as well as these people build these buildings. I mean, they have no aesthetic value. They're cheap. There's no ecological concern. There's all air conditioning. There's no passive cooling or heating. It's just one block, you know. It's just a moneymaker. You know, just put dollar signs on the outside. They're not attractive, and they're not helping the citizens of Bethlehem. So when we address homelessness, you have to also address affordability in Bethlehem. Otherwise, we're going to have more homelessness. That's the end of the story. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ruka. Is there anyone else in the center who wanted to speak on the current topic? Yes, at the end.
Lindsay Alvader Clifton, 833 Belmont Street, Associate Pastor of Formation and Justice at First Presbyterian Church here in Bethlehem. I'm here again. I was at the public committee level hearing, in part because it's that important to say that these funds and this allocation are really critical to meeting the needs of our most vulnerable neighbors. I certainly understand and echo that the housing crisis in the Lehigh Valley and across our country is multifaceted, but transitional housing and emergency sheltering needs for our most vulnerable neighbors is a critical piece alongside affordable housing, which is why I'm grateful that the city is assessing and planning around both of those things. So I offer that as affirmation for the ongoing work. I'm grateful for the partners who are in the room, both Bethlehem Emergency Sheltering and New Bethany Ministries, and for the ways that they, along with the city, are building collaborative and connective dreaming and planning and hoping and funding to bring this to life and to make it possible, because 1.4 million is a teeny tiny sliver of what it's going to take to even meet this particular need. So I offer my support and words of encouragement to you all as council to keep this moving forward, trusting that the community is with you and behind you and supporting you, because and this is a piece from Braiding Sweetgrass, which is a really powerful text if you haven't read it. Indigenous wisdom, scientific knowledge, and the teaching of plants. In it, scientist, professor, and author Robin Wall Kimmerer explains the way that nut trees don't all sort of make a crop every year, but they produce at sort of these random intervals. Some years it's a feast, and some years it's a famine. But the interesting piece to me that she writes about is that if one tree fruits, they all fruit. And it's not just one tree in a grove, but the whole grove, not one grove in the forest, but every grove, all across the country and all across the state. And here she says, the trees act not as individuals, but somehow as a collective. Exactly how they do this, we don't yet know, but what we see is the power of unity. What happens to one happens to us all. We can starve together or feast together. All flourishing is mutual. And my friends, that is what I am hoping that you will remember in this piece of the decision, which feels perhaps perfunctory and meeting a necessary step in a process, but it is more and bigger than that, because the flourishing of our neighbors and our friends depends on that. I taught high school English for a number of years before moving into congregational life and ministry, and one of the first things they remind us of in the classroom is Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and how if your basic needs for safety and home and dignity aren't met, then no greater flourishing is possible. So we must start here to meet these essential needs.
Thank you. Anyone else in the center who would to make comment?
Hi, everyone. So that was all really fantastic, all three of you. Thank you so much. My name is John Mark Riddle, 1326. I think everybody leaves their pens when they come up here. <It's real. laughs> Yep, I'll give them back after. So 1326 North Street, I'm the executive director of New Bethany Ministries. I'm also recently appointed as a Bethlehem Housing Authority commissioner. And I wanted to thank the city and the council for outlining and preparing this study to address homelessness. It's an important effort and one that New Bethany has been closely involved with, as has Bethlehem Emergency Sheltering, has been mentioned and was mentioned at the previous committee meeting a couple of weeks ago. But my purpose for speaking today is just to address, so this is funds for an emergency shelter. And at the last committee meeting, a question came up from someone in the room about strategy. So, and the strategy specifically was one called Housing First. And I just wanted to talk about that for about a minute and a half today. So Housing First is the best strategy to address homelessness, and I'm here to sort of talk about what it is. Housing First is the leading national strategy to end homelessness. It works by identifying the immediate problem, which is the lack of a house, and addressing the problem by providing a person or family with an apartment or a house. And homeless serving organizations such as New Bethany are tasked then with either helping a family remain in their current home or by helping a family quickly find another home. And the strategy works best when mixed with case management. And that is really a critical piece when mixed with case management. You do not just find someone a home and then everything falls off of a cliff. And that's why the homeless service organizations need to be there as partners with a household, with individuals and families, and then also partners with the landlords, right, with the property owners where the people are staying. So we don't just help find people a home, we also help retain employment, childcare, transportation with enough income remaining to have adequate, nutritious food. So Housing First would work perfectly if there was enough affordable housing stock in our city or region. And unfortunately, there is not, as two people have already alluded to today. So we need a few other interventions along the way to combine with the search for housing. And among those interventions, there's a couple, are temporary supportive housing. Some call this transitional housing, but in this case, temporary supportive actually has a short-term lease. So it's not just you're staying here for a period of time, but you actually have a lease for services while you work with caseworkers. And then most important, when a person has no place to stay, like actually tonight, you do need an overnight shelter. So thank you, because that's what this proposal is for, with these particular funds. Just yesterday, I just need to provide this example, and it literally was yesterday, I pulled up to work to find a person sleeping on the landing of an unused building near where I park. And this person, we know this person at New Bethany, a recent person who has come to us that we do provide services to, but when it comes to overnight shelter, we have to say, well, the emergency winter shelter opens on November 15th, so you have to wait until then. And that's something literally that we had to do 2 days ago. So to truly address homelessness, we need to have a concerted both and solution. Every city, and I'm here to say across the nation, every city that touts Housing First as their primary vehicle to address homelessness, they are correct, but I guarantee they also have an emergency shelter and probably temporary supportive housing as well. So thank you to Michael Baker, and also the city, and especially to the council for identifying the right solution, which is a really critical step, and then even more critical, putting dollars towards that solution. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Riddle. Anyone else in the center who wanted to speak on the allocation plan and the strategic plan to address homelessness? I turn to the right. Now would be the time.
Hello, my name is Liam Cassidy, and this is my mom.
My name is Kathy Cassidy, and we're at 2151 Jennings Street here in Bethlehem. Sorry, we don't usually come to these meetings, but we heard you were speaking about this topic, and we are both very interested in it, and so encouraged to hear this is being addressed. I happen to be a medical social worker at an adult clinic here in the South Side. Every week, I have patients who are having housing problems. Probably know Bethlehem Housing is closed, Allentown Housing is closed. There's not enough affordable housing. I think you all know that. So I literally have homeless people come into the office. We are looking at the social determinants of health and trying to improve. And I think, Ms. Riddle, when you mentioned housing first, absolutely. You know, we can't make a dent on any of their medical issues until they have housing. So I'm encouraged, and I'm just very hopeful that this goes through soon. I need it tomorrow. I have a homeless person coming in to see me tomorrow, I think. So I don't have any actually more details. I just wanted to express the need. We are Bethlehem, founded by the Moravians, and I just say it's still amazing that we don't have enough room in the inn, you know. So I'm encouraged, and I appreciate, you know, all the work that's gone into this. And my son Liam, Eagle Scout, worked on the emergency shelter project, so I know he's very interested too. So thank you for this time.
I just wanted to say, like, this is more important than many people realize, because there are people that went to the schools of this city, you know, including me, who have had to, some people that go to the schools, the public schools in this city, are living outside and they don't know how to get help. We just gotta do something.
Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. I thank you both for coming out tonight, and anytime you need to reach out. Ms. Collins is our Director of Community Economic Development, who spoke earlier, and then we, of course, are the City Council. You're welcome anytime to reach out, even if it's not, you know, here at an official City Council meeting, if you have more pressing things to tend to. Is there anyone else that wanted to speak before I adjourn the second public hearing? Anyone else want to make comment on the allocation plan associated with the strategic plan to address homelessness? Everyone's given courtesy of the floor once, Mr. Zettelmore. Let me rephrase that. Is there anyone who hasn't spoke yet who wanted to have courtesy of the floor?
I just want my 55 seconds back.
Mr. Zettelmore, you'll have an opportunity to speak if you want to address council at the next courtesy of the floor once I start the City Council meeting here.
I might lose this audience, and it's important that I get my name and my phone number out in our organization.
And if you, I will. Go ahead, Mr. Zettelmoyer.
Okay, Jeff Zettelmoyer. My email address is zettdr@gmail.com. My phone number is 610-585-1111. And we are developing a web page. I don't have the address right now. And my last question is, what are the developers' funds for affordable housing units? Where is that money going to go to?
So this isn't usually where we have a public dialogue or a back and forth like that, but I do encourage anyone to stay to the end of the meeting. If you didn't catch Mr. Zettelmoyer's phone number or email address, and I invite you to stay to the end, Mr. Zettelmoyer, if there is anyone else who had questions for you or wanted to get some of your contact information directly. I'm going to adjourn our second public hearing and move forward with tonight's regular council agenda, starting with the approval of the minutes for the October 18th meeting. Any questions on the minutes? Minutes shall stand approved. So now to our regularly scheduled public comments. Our first public comment is on any subject not being voted on this evening. So we have a couple people who signed up, and then I'll open it back up. So this is for any topic anyone is inclined to address council about. You are welcome to. I'll start with those who had signed up, starting with a representative from Geff Street. I'm sorry, I don't have a name here, but I invite you up.
Hi, my name is Karen Dahl, and I live at 136 East Geff Street.
Robin Morrison, 133 East Geff Street.
The reason we wanted to approach City Council was because of the safety issues at High and East Gap. Where we are located is approximately one block from Liberty High School, so not only is it a high accident area, it is also an area where you have children walking, if not to Northeast, but also Liberty High School. There have been numerous accidents, and I have lived on this street since 1984. So just last week, Robin, there was, what, two?
You know what, just within the last 3 weeks, Thursday, there was a city bus involved in an accident at that corner. There is also a bus station, a bus stop, not a bus station, a bus stop, right on the corner of one of those streets. We have no pedestrian crosswalks. In addition to Liberty High School students, we also have Northeast students coming down. So we have people crossing for the bus stop. We have kids and students crossing both ways. The stop signs on the corners of High Street are poorly visible. The one stop sign is about an 80-degree angle in towards the house, not out towards the sign. The peripheral vision of where that white line is, where you need to stop at the stop sign, you do not have enough vision to make it across the street, and especially when there are cars zipping up and down over the 25 mile an hour speed limit to get from the one stoplight on Center Street to the other stoplight on Linden Street to make it through those. Our intersection is not treated like an intersection. Last 2 weeks ago, there was a three-car accident there, and somebody was sitting at the stop sign waiting to go and was hit by a car. So I have also lived on Gap Street for 31 years. In addition to hearing the crashes, we are also hearing beeping constantly at that corner because people cannot see to get out. So accidents are numerous. We're asking, thank you for listening to us, and we're asking for you to find a temporary solution as well as a long-term solution as soon as possible. Thank you.
I just have one more question though. Living on a city street, I always wondered if commercial trucks are allowed to park on those city streets because they are parking so close to the corners that if you're not, you know, if you're trying to cross, you're either blocked by a tree or you're blocked by these huge commercial trucks. And what that also presents an issue, you know, in the high volume of the accidents.
I also have pictures. They're on my phone, but I would be happy to forward the pictures to you that I have taken at the stop signs to show the visibility. It's like people are holding their breath to shoot across that intersection. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming out. There's no one here from our traffic bureau, but Mr. Alcall is our public works director. If you want to, we have a light agenda tonight. If you want to hang out to the end of the meeting, Mr. Alcall might at least be able to get some contact information. He's the gentleman in the dark suit to the end over here. And then if you want to stay to the end of the meeting, even if maybe just exchange contact information or see what might potentially be able to be done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next person signed up is Mr. Hirsch.
Alex Hirsch, 738 Center Street. Same topic. I'm up to 109 days. I do have some limited self-awareness, so I'm going to limit my comments following all this discussion of homelessness. But as a person living in two places, I am still not allowed to park here in the city as a resident, despite owning a home, paying taxes. I don't know if you got any additional information after last meeting.
We could speak at the end of the meeting.
Sure. I know a month and a half or so ago I had proposed changing the ordinance in terms of limiting it to people working within the city limits being allowed to park, and that was, there were concerns with that in terms of the impact it would have. The other is to allow a pathway for homeowners to demonstrate residency through their personal local income taxes, property taxes, city water bills, city services. I mean, in every other regard, I'm a resident of the city, except for parking. I have made it 109 days without getting a ticket, so I'm proud of that. That involves moving my car 2 to 3 times many evenings into rotating blocks around my home until I can get toward the end of that window. It's wacky, and I'm just looking for any sort of resolution to this, please. I don't want to be a regular here, but I need to park. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Our next person who had signed up is Linda Roberts. You're okay, Ms. Roberts? And then our next person signed up was Anna Zaruka. Apologies.
No problem. I want to speak actually on two issues. The first issue is on the chicken ordinance. That has been spoken about in various meetings here, and I first, you know, want to appreciate the administration's concern, and I believe the administration's concern is well intended. Their concern against the chicken ordinance, but I really feel that their concern has been heavy-handed, and it tries to portray that the introduction of at most 240 chickens in a community with 75,000 people, that's going to cause undue, unmanageable stress, outrageous cost, and use of personnel that's already overworked. And let's not forget also that they mentioned the avian flu, which is attacking and going across the United States in, you know, large numbers. So these are the points that they keep bringing up why we should not have this ordinance. I do not think that they're at all valid, and there are a lot of hyperbole. And I'd like to maybe illustrate how their concern is out of place by comparing dogs to chickens. Okay, we have, I think, about 30,000 households in Bethlehem, give or take, and I looked up on Google God, you know, Google God, he tells us everything, or she tells us everything, or maybe they, I don't know, we have to be, you know, gender neutral these days. Anyways, 40% of households will have a dog, so that would mean that in Bethlehem we may have 12,000 dogs. Again, back to the ordinance, we're asking for 40 families possibly to take advantage of it with a max of 6 chickens, so we're talking about 240 chickens versus 12,000 dogs. And we're being told by administration that we cannot, in Bethlehem, handle 240 chickens. I don't know. I think that's a little bit an overstatement. Again, dogs versus chickens. I'm terrified by dogs. It's taken me a long time to get comfortable with dogs because 3 times, just innocently walking down the street, I've been attacked by a dog. I mean, I didn't do anything to the dog. I don't know why they wanted to attack me, but I was attacked and bitten. I've never been attacked by a chicken. I mean, I sometimes, you know, birds, they fly, you know, like kind of the birds from Hitchcock, you know, they can look frightening. They can make us uptight, but generally, you know, birds are okay. Avian flu. Well, how about rabies, guys? 60 to 70 dogs a year have rabies, 250 cats. 127 cases of rabies are recorded in the United States, 1/4 due to dog bites. Okay? Avian flu. I don't know. Anybody's gotten avian flu? Anybody has a neighbor that's died with avian flu? No. Okay? The USDA has really great resources
on dealing with avian flu. We have lots of money, so again, this resource problem, should we have this large number of chickens flying around Bethlehem, the locals, we can call the USDA, they have resources, they actually have funds, they actually have a department, they would even come and check your chickens if you thought there was something wrong with them and help you in dealing with them. So again, you know, I don't think that is an issue. So in closing, okay, I feel that the administration's concerns have been disingenuous and patronizing. And in conclusion, I wish that this council will move forward and not be distracted by these, you know, avian flu, you know, high costs, so on and so forth. I just feel those are distractions and patronizing comments, and that we as Bethlehem citizens have the right to try it out. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Z. That was our last person signed up. Is there anyone? I'll go around the room. Again, this is for anything not being voted on this evening, so anything anyone wants to bring up to council. I'll start to the left. Is there anyone who wants to make comment? Mr. Antalis.
Thank you, sir. Friday afternoon, Stephen Antalis, 77 Ridge. Friday afternoon, as I reviewed the agenda for this evening, I was quite taken by the plethora of appointments to the Arts Commission. But I was greatly dismayed by the absence of any appointments to the HCC. So I was not obliged to speak tonight. I was forced. I'm forced to speak tonight simply for that issue. I had known of Fred Bonsall as a well-respected architect, but didn't meet him until the winter of 2009-2010. A vacancy had opened on the Historic Architectural Review Board, and I applied. Until recently, Bethlehem Mayors forwarded applicants for Harv for its chair for input. Fred called me, invited me to his office. I arrived to meet a warm, cheerful man who said, "I'm very impressed by your resume," before even saying hello. That moment began 10 years of collegiality. When it was time to elect the new chair of HARB, Fred nominated me. Now, Mr. Bonsall received a citation for his outstanding contribution, and he recognized someone who might be equal to him. But what I read is from a communique from Ms. Fritz. In the oath of office for the mayor, it ends, "Discharging my duties as mayor of the city of Bethlehem with fidelity." According to Webster, fidelity is, politically speaking, faithfulness to something to which one is bound by pledge and duty. Now, when a person is highly qualified and is serving on the board and not reappointed, that raises a major red flag. And why some highly appointed qualified people not appointed also or not on those boards also raises a red flag. And this was brought up by one of you on two different occasions. So how might we interpret discharging my duties with fidelity? Could it imply dereliction of duty? by depriving a city of a highly qualified person sitting on a board? Also, there appeared on an agenda some time ago a name of a person for HCC who implicitly had a conflict of interest. But that name was never brought before council because behind the scenes there was talk about negative votes. And a person of high office in the city, apparently, by rumor to me, may have contacted council people and asked them why they would not vote for this person. Now, to me, this is behind the scenes politics. It's cheap. Candidates should be discussed openly because government should be transparent. Now, what bothers me is this. Council is a check and balance. And they should be asking the questions that I'm asking. Why was that person not reappointed? That's your job, to represent us in our best interest. To me, that smacks of, this might be a democratic club where you don't make waves. Not a council who acts as a check and balance. So I should be hearing questions that you should be asking.
Mr. Italics, I'm going to ask you to bring remarks.
Yes.
Please.
It's only 16 seconds, but I think you should hear this, sir, okay?
I've played
right? Just bear with me. I know it's embarrassing, but bear with me, all right? Thank you. I am merely asking questions. I'm getting no answers. So one of you needs to ask the questions and allow the citizens of Bethlehem to have the proper information in terms of why the best citizens are not on the boards.
Thank you, Mr. Antelix. Is there anyone else to the left who wanted to make comment during public comment? Seeing none, I'll turn to the center. Anyone else who wants to make comment on anything not being voted on tonight? And I will turn to the right. That will conclude our public comment. Thank you, everyone. So our second public comment, this is for anything that is being voted on tonight. So we already addressed those who signed up for the public hearing. So again, this is anything that's on as an ordinance or a resolution tonight. There are no other names signed up. Again, I'll go around the room. Anything being voted on this evening? Seeing none. We're going to move on to the agenda, starting with old business. Any old business from members of council?
Just real quick, somebody left it. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. No old business from members of council. Moving on to communications, communication 6C.
Memorandum with an attached resolution from Michael Alcall, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with Gordian Group Incorporated in order to implement job order contracting solutions to be utilized on an as-needed basis. The city will work with Gordian to develop a job order contracting program, which will be competitively bid and awarded to contractors based on lowest unit pricing.
Resolution 10A is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
Memorandum with an attached resolution from Michael Alcall, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with Quinn Construction Incorporated to repair structural deficiencies to the City Hall garage, including repair of the reinforced concrete beam/wall beneath the library and the reinforced concrete columns. The original contract price was $183,430. The sum of all change orders is $58,182. And the updated total is $241,612. The estimated completion date, subject to standard extensions, is October 5th, 2022. There are no renewals.
And Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6E.
Memorandum with an attached resolution from Mike Laucall, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract change with Aquatic Facility Design Incorporated to provide concept and feasibility design services for structural repairs and/or renovations for Stark Pool. The amount of the contract is $33,900, and the estimated completion date is May 31st, 2013. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6F.
Memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. Permittee is the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce by and through its Downtown Bethlehem Association. And the event is the 2022 Christmas City Village Christmas Huts on Main. The agreement is from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. on November 10th, 12th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th, and December 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 8th, 9th, 10th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of 2022. And from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday, November 13th, 20th, 27th, and December 4th and 11th, as well as 18th of 2022. Premises is Main Street and West Broad Street, sidewalk right-of-way locations, and city property along Main Street adjacent to the Moravian Blacksmith Shop.
Thank you. Resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6G.
Memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. Permittee is Arts Quest, and the event is the Ice Rink at Steel Stacks. The agreement is from November 22nd, 2022 through January 2nd, 2023, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, only 12 noon to 12 midnight. Premises is First Street from Founders Way to the Eastern Terminus.
And Resolution 10E is on the agenda. Communication 6H.
Memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. Permittee is Arts Quest, and the event is the 2022 Peeps Fest with Fun Run Walk and Fireworks. The agreement is December 30th, 2022 and December 31st, 2022 from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. and December 30th and 31st, 2022 at 5:30 p.m. or projected fireworks time. Premises is First Street from Founders Way to the Eastern Terminus.
And Resolution 10F is on the agenda. Reports, I have nothing to report this evening. I will turn to Mr. Evans.
I'll start out. Thank you, President Colon. First of all, congratulations on the birth of your baby daughter. We wish you and Aaron the best.
We'll need it.
Second, two announcements and five administrative orders. Second announcement is that last Wednesday, on October 26, Mayor Reynolds and his administration presented We Build Bethlehem at the Fowler Center on 3rd Street. It was well attended. A number of council was able to make it. We thank you for that. And we want to let the rest of council, as well as that was not able to make it, anyone here in the room this evening or anyone watching at home, that the entire presentation is available on video. And the slides that supported the presentation are also available on the American Rescue Plan quick link on our homepage. The other announcement is that on Sunday, we successfully held our 101st Halloween Parade. A number of council marched or drove, and we thank you for your participation. The weather was great. Our participation across the board and attendance was fantastic. It was just a great day all in all. A number of city departments participated, from police, fire, the public works, community development. We also had great participation from the Bethlehem Area School District, which brought all of their bands and elementary schools, as well as a number of individuals and organizations. There will be a celebration, awards ceremony in the days to come that will be announced, but the winners selected by the committee are posted now on our website, so we'll be able to celebrate with them in the coming days. I do have five administrative orders for the mayor. Administrative order number 19, I hereby appoint Susan E. Birkenstock, 2025 Henderson Street, Bethlehem, PA 18017, to the Bethlehem Fine Arts Commission. This appointment is effective through December of 2025.
For Susan E. Birkenstock, to the appointment to the Fine Arts Commission, the resolution to confirm is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Any discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Francie Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Galone?
Aye. Passes 6-0.
Thank you. Administrative order number 20. I hereby appoint Adam D. Ercolani, 521 Cherokee Street, number 2, Bethlehem, PA 18015, to the Bethlehem Fine Arts Commission. This appointment is effective through May 2025.
For Adam D. Ercolani, appointment to the Fine Arts Commission, the resolution to confirm is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colum?
Aye. Passes 6-0.
Thank you. Administrative order number 21, I hereby appoint Elizabeth Saraceno, 3940 Norfolk Drive, Bethlehem, PA, 18020, to the Bethlehem Fine Arts Commission. This appointment is effective through April 2023.
For Elizabeth Saraceno, resolution to confirm to the Fine Arts Commission is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colum?
Aye. Passes 6-0.
Thank you. Administrative order number 22, I hereby appoint Stephanie Powell Watts, 26 South 26th Street, Allentown, PA 18104, to the Bethlehem Fine Arts Commission. This appointment is effective through March 2024.
Stephanie Powell Watts, resolution to confirm to the Fine Arts Commission, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? We will call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Francis Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colum?
Aye. Passes 6-0.
Thank you. Administrative order number 23, I hereby appoint Catherine Worth, 2450 Black River Road, Bethlehem, PA 18015, to Bethlehem Fine Arts Commission. This appointment is effective through February 2025.
Catherine Worth, the resolution to confirm to the Fine Arts Commission, sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Glum?
Aye. Passes 6-0.
Thank you. I'd like to turn to Ms. Collins.
Sure, and I just have two topics to touch on briefly as part of the mayor's report. The first, appreciating so much the comments that people have made this evening on the public hearing about the homelessness plan, but the ways in which all of this conversation that we're having touches on affordable housing. And you know, we talked at the We Build Bethlehem event about our affordable housing work, but wanted to put in memo just a few updates. We're sort of at a transition point. We're moving into the community engagement phase of our work with the reinvestment fund. Up to this point, we've been doing a lot of data analysis, the market value assessment, a displacement risk ratio, and our housing needs assessment. And now as we move into the engagement phase, just wanted to talk and let everybody know and provide opportunities, you know, for people in the public and for council and other stakeholders to participate. The way that we're focusing on the engagement, we're starting, you know, with people and what people experience. We talked to a number of service providers. We all have our own stories, but you know, there are many people across the city who are experiencing the distress caused by the housing situation, have their own experience with possible solutions and programs, and have insight to provide to us about what they're seeing in real time. So we're doing a series of pop-up engagement events. A few that have already taken place have yielded, I think, 175 touch points with residents who are engaging in this conversation with us. Most of that, I believe, came from Trunk or Treat, which was wildly successful, is my understanding. And there's going to be a series of those continuing from this point on. We're also going to be holding focus groups, and those will be a little more targeted in who we're talking to and bringing to the table. People who are service providers, people who are, you know, in the housing space, whether it be developers or realtors or other people who, can contribute not only to the conversation about the problems, but also the potential solutions, what works, what doesn't. And then we're going to culminate with a large community meeting, which will be, I believe, at the end of this year or the beginning of next. We're going to look to partners and all of you to help us, you know, invite as many people as possible to that community conversation workshop. And I think that's going to be a really important part of that engagement process as well. And then looking forward into the future, we are thinking about, you know, the ways that we are presenting and having conversations with council about all of this. It's such an important topic. We think that the best way to do it is will be to have at least a series of committee meetings, like waiting until the end and saying, like, you know, hey, here are all the strategies that, you know, we've come up with through this process. It's just not sufficient for the gravity of the situation and the ways that we need to sort of frame where we're coming from, where we sit, you know, as far as what we as the city are able to do, what solutions may work, what solutions may not work, what our constraints are, what our current situation is here with, you know, what we're seeing in the housing market, and also the way that we're analyzing the solutions and how we're moving forward. So there's not an official request, just you know, putting everybody on notice, I guess, as a heads up that we're going to be requesting those probably after the budget season ends. So that's all I have on that. And then the other topic, switching gears drastically, city recycling, curbside service. We've talked about this for a couple of months now. We did take our curbside recycling contract out to bid. The current contract ends at the end of this year. The contractor did not choose to exercise the option for extension. We received and opened the bids on October 13th. We received bids from three firms. The lowest of all the bids that we received was for single stream recycling service. And with our current contract, this year of the contract, we're paying about $1.17 million. The lowest bid that came in was about a 53.5% increase, so it's about $600,000. Unfortunately, that is not unexpected based on the conversations that we've been having here, but also, you know, that are informed by, you know, our research in the market and our conversations with providers, and also what I believe is being seen in other communities in the recycling and waste hauling industry. We anticipated that the bids were going to come back high, and they did. You know, and I think over the history here in the city and in recent past, the city administration and with the support of council over many years has done a really good job of keeping the fee for recycling even. I don't think it's been raised for about 6 or 7 years. And that's while the commodities market for recycling has declined and, you know, we've seen a big shift in like what our overall recycling program looks like. But we've done a really good job of, you know, being efficient, being effective, looking at operations. But now with this, you know, really unavoidable increase, we're going to have to increase the recycling fee, like commensurate with that, 53.5% increase in the cost of the service on our end. So we are, as I said, we received the bids, we've analyzed the bids, we are awarding the bid. You'll see that at the next city council meeting, so on November 15th. You'll get both the recommendation for the award of the contract to the lowest bidder and also a proposed ordinance change that will increase the fee, unfortunately. So, you know, putting that on everybody's radar now, we're happy to have conversations before the next meeting and, you know, continue to have conversations as appropriate. But that's the situation that we are unfortunately in here with recycling.
Thank you, Ms. Collins, for the updates on both, and we'll have further conversations when that time comes. And thanks for the heads up that we'll be seeing it next time. Moving on to the agenda, new ordinances. We don't have anything tonight. I skipped an agenda item. Ordinances for final passage. If the clerk will read bill. Oh, yeah. Sorry, a little sleep deprived. I'll turn to Dr. Van Wert.
Community Development Committee met on Wednesday, October 19th at 5 p.m. in Town Hall. The committee held the annual Financial Accountability Incentive Reporting Hearing required by Article 349 and reviewed economic development incentive reports submitted by the administration. The meeting was for informational purposes only and no actions were taken.
Thank you, Dr. Van Wert. So moving on to ordinances for final passage, I'll ask the clerk to read Bill 25-2022.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, requiring the mandatory recusal of public officials in matters that they hold a financial interest. Bill 25-22 is sponsored by Dr. Van Wert and Dr. Enix.
Discussion? Dr.
I just wanted to take this opportunity to make a few comments. I didn't say much for the first vote, but I do think that this is important, and I wanted to address this. So our system of voting, as everyone realizes, is set up to be self-correcting when it comes to conflict of interest. That takes the shape of campaign finance disclosure forms, state ethics laws, personal financial interest statements, and then, of course, there's always our personal code of ethics. The tenet here is that voters can be aware and spot the conflict of interest and then vote that person out of office if they feel that they have violated that tenet. However, it's not working, at least in the small-scale municipal politics, and I would argue large-scale as well. Voters are not in general, they don't read finance campaign, finance disclosure forms, nor are those forms themselves monitored very carefully. Ideally, conflict of interest law like this would not be necessary if this self-correcting system were working, but it's not. Local politicians have voted on matters in which they have a financial interest and did not recuse themselves from voting, not this council, but in the past. The power of incumbency, along with some voter apathy, has created a situation where more vigorous rules must be put in place to preserve trust of our citizens so that our vote is for them and not for us. The crux of the matter can be distilled down to the appearance of a conflict of interest as the driver. For example, and forgive me, I've used this analogy before, but I think it's relevant. If I attend a fancy drug dinner paid for by GlaxoSmithKline, or if I take a junket to Maui in which a new expensive medication is described and evidence is put out and it's solid, peer-reviewed, it's in the New England Journal, I know it's an effective medication. Even with all of this robust data available that proves that this drug works, if my patients see my name on any of those drug rep disclosure forms, they'll never actually know, did I do this because it is the right drug for them, or did I do it because of a sense of necessity because of what I got from those drug companies? So this law only begins to touch at the problems that we may have on the local level in terms of ethics. We have contracting issues, there's always nepotism, and we have campaign-to-campaign donations in which one political campaign donates to another, thereby clouding who's paying for what. It's also a way that traditional politicians have managed to keep the status quo. It keeps outsiders out, and it doesn't allow divergent views to come in and hold power. So all these things need to be addressed as well. But I'm willing to start small with just this, and it's because I trust my colleagues on council that they see what I see, and that they are concerned where I'm concerned, that they will help continue this good work. In an ideal system, this law would not be needed. But until we obtain that ideal, I'm happy with this proposal, which I think is pretty darn good. This proposed ordinance has received very little coverage in our local news. There's no scandal, there's no personalities, there's no scary chickens. But underneath it all this dull exterior, this is the stuff that matters, that reassures our citizens that we are here, up here, for one reason only, and that's for you. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Van Wert. Any other comments from members of council as well?
I just wanted to take a moment to thank you, Dr. Van Wert. This ordinance is reflective of a good deal of work on your part, and as you stated yourself, the measures that are in place to ensure transparency are only effective if the members of the public know how to utilize them, and campaign finance forms, accessing those things and making sense of them. are not necessarily user-friendly opportunities. So this is a way of holding us to a more transparent accountability level, and it's something that you have done for the residents of Bethlehem, and I appreciate the work that you've put into it. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Leo?
I would encourage anybody who is interested in this to go back and watch the meeting, so I think we talked this through from every stance, and we had many amendments that failed or went through, so if you really want to know what's going on here, it's out there.
Thank you. Anybody else? I'll just say, because I know this is the second reason I wasn't here the last time, just going off of what Ms. Leone just said, we did have a few committee meetings about this. I won't get into some of my long-winded comments from the last time, other than thank you, Dr. Van Wert. I know you were the genesis of this, and I thank all of council, as we did have a couple committee meetings where there were some amendments made. There was some good, honest dialogue, honest discussion, recognizing that good is better than perfect, and that we are now able to vote on something for the second reading after some discussion, talking amongst each other, coming back to the committee meetings, passing those amendments, and now here we are at the second reading. So thank you, everyone, starting with Dr. Van Wert, for your work. I will ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
6-0.
Passes 6-0. Thank you. As I mentioned earlier, we have no new ordinances this evening. Moving on to resolutions. The clerk will read Resolution 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with the Gordian Group for Gordian Job Order Contracting. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion?
I have a quick question.
Yes,
Mr. Alcala. So, and maybe I didn't read this correctly because tonight my reading comprehension isn't so great, but there's no cost associated with this, correct? Yeah. So how does the Gordian Group make their money?
There's no cost at this time. You're not approving the expenditure of any funds. What this is to set up a system whereby you will solicit bids from contractors on typical items that the city utilizes on a regular basis. And based on those bids, we would select a composite contractor that provides the lowest and best pricing, qualified contractor. Mm-hmm. And when and if work arises, especially in situations where there's a time element, this is a government-sponsored process, we could go to that contractor and they would give us pricing by simply giving the unit prices what we want. They multiply by the successful bid that they put in, and they give us a cost estimate, and then we enter into our contract. So it expedites the process. It basically doing the bidding ahead of the need when it arises, so that we can get to do the work a little bit faster and reduce the timeline to accomplish the work.
So is that like, so Gordian is kind of on retainer to help us with that process, and
yes.
So we pay them at the time that they would.
We don't pay them. They have agreements with. They work with numerous contractors throughout the state, and when we utilize those contractors, they get a percentage of the value of the work.
That was my question. How do they get paid? Because obviously, if we're not paying them, then they've got to get paid.
We know what we're going to pay, and it'll be based on the bids that are received competitively from all the contractors. Once we award the work, they get a percentage, Gordian. But, from the, we awarded work for $100,000, we don't pay anything beyond that to Gordian. The contractors pay us, sort of like when you use your credit card, you get 3%.
Mr. Alcohol, before you step down, I think that microphone is actually off. Would you mind checking the switch on the other side?
I think we had turned it off because of the
feedback. It'd be on the actual microphone itself. I believe the switch may be down.
Did everyone hear Mr. Alcall?
That's what I'm wondering. I mean, as long as we heard him this time around, if we could turn it back on. Hmm?
And so then my follow-up question to that is just, are we talking, you're talking about things, as you said, sort of things we regularly do, as opposed to we're building a new building, or we're, yeah. You know, so you're talking about
things for example, that are, we may have unit prices on concrete, on pavement, on paving, that sort of work that comes up frequently, and if we're in a situation where we want to get something quickly done, either because of some grant requirement or any other requirement, this is a faster process to which to get at it.
Okay. I guess it's not going to sound good, but the word kickback just comes into my mind when I think about this arrangement where Gordian is facilitating these contracts, and then the way that they get paid is they get paid by the contractors. So I guess that's my only concern with this. And so I because this is the first time I've seen this come up since we took office, I had questions that, you know, concerns about that part of it. I mean, I'm not accusing them of taking kickbacks. You're saying it's quite transparent. That is how they get paid.
Yes, I mean, it's a small percentage of the unit prices that are provided by the contractor. And the whole process is competitively bid, so they have to make sure that they're giving us.
Right, and they're going to go with the lowest price.
We're
going to
go with the lowest unit
price. Right, exactly. Okay, thank you. So in the end, we are still making the decision about the bidder we're choosing.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. The clerk will read Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Queen Construction Incorporated for City Hall structural repair. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Aquatic Facility Design Incorporated for Stark Pool Design Services. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Mr. Alcall, I just had a quick question, if you don't mind, for the contract over at Stark. So is this just because of the age of the pool? I mean, is the pool operational, or is this just looking to upgrade something?
When we drained the pool for the season, there must be some voids that there was a joint in the center of the pool that appears to have been leaking, and there's probably, we are expecting that there's some voids that were created underneath the pool floor, and then when we drained it, that caused some uneven settlement of concrete both in the decking as well as the bottom of the pool. Once we completely drained the pool, some of that came back to sort of close to normal, but not quite. So what this contract is for is to essentially perform some borings to confirm or eliminate the possibility of remaining voids underneath both the decking and the bottom of the pool, address them if there's still some voids, and then make the repairs to be able to confidently put the pool back into service.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Apple. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Quinta?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10D.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and the controller and or such other officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce by and through its Downtown Bethlehem Association for the 2022 Christmas City Village Christmas Huts on Main. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Ms. Cranches.
Yes. I just have a question. I guess this includes not only the huts down by the hotel, but also the kiosks on Main Street. Is that correct, I would assume? I'm not sure who can answer that.
Yes.
Okay. And I guess I just wanted, I was wondering, how are they assigned? Because certainly there's some more prime real estate spots than others, and I just want to make sure that they're assigned in an equitable fashion. Does anybody have input on that?
I think that's managed by the DBA and the chamber.
Okay. Because I think there was some concerns in the past that there might not have been some equitable assignment, and we just want to make sure, you know, that there is equitable assignment in the future. Okay? I mean, that we don't want people that have maybe some pull with the DBA or administration or whatever to have prime real estate and others not.
I don't want to speak for the law bureau. I don't know that we can put that in the use permit agreement.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying generally speaking, I'm hoping that whoever's in charge of assigning the kiosks is going to be equitable in that assignment.
Yeah, they apply for the permit. The chamber does. They apply for the permit.
And then there's different locations for the kiosks, and that's my concern. You know, some locations are going to be more beneficial than others.
But we don't put them there.
Who decides that? The chamber?
Yeah, they apply for the permit.
Okay, then I'll speak to the chamber.
Where
they're going to be. Okay, sounds good. I'll speak to the chamber then. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? I'll say Halloween just ended. We're already in Christmas season.
We're so in Christmas mode.
I'll ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Glum?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10E.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and the controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Arts Quest for the ice rink at Steel Stacks. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. And our last resolution, 10F.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and the Controller, and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Arts Quest for the 2022 Peaks Fest with Fun Run, Walk, and Fireworks. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Any discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Moving on to new business, discussing our 2023 budget meeting schedule. I will accept a motion to set the date for adoption of the 2023 budget on Tuesday, December 20th, 2022 at 7 p.m. here in Town Hall.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilwoman Kwiatek, second by Dr. Van Wert. Any discussion on the motion? The clerk will. Ms. Kramsci Smith?
I just had a question as far as when we will get the budget books. Is that going to be coming soon?
It's the 11th. The 11th is the day the dress is the day they were printed up and distributed.
So we'll get the day the dress.
Any other discussion? We'll call the roll on the motion.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Briefly want to run through our budget meeting schedule and then what's going to be covered at each one. Our first budget hearing will be Tuesday, November 22nd at 6 p.m. here in Town Hall. That meeting is going to cover the Public Works Department, our Liquid Fuels Fund, our Stormwater Fund, our Non-Utility Capital Fund, Water Fund Revenue and Expenses, the Water Capital Budget, the Sewer Fund Revenue and Expenses, and then the Sewer Capital Budget. The following week on Tuesday, November the 29th at 6 p.m. here in Town Hall will be our second hearing to review in our budget books the Golf Course Enterprise Fund, administration expenses, council, mayor, treasurer,
the control and the law bureau expenses, general fund revenue, general expenses, civic expenses, and debt service. And then our third budget hearing is scheduled for Wednesday, November 30th, continuing the theme of 6 p.m., and that will cover the fire department, the police department, community and economic development, as well as the community development block grant fund. We have reserved Monday, December the 5th, 2022 at 6 p.m. here as the final budget meeting. This meeting will only occur if necessary, if there are any proposed amendments or other needs to get together to have a budget hearing. The budget hearings, I'll just say, not the most exciting meetings you'd ever attend. I'll briefly say my first city council meeting I ever came to was a budget hearing. I just kind of walked in because I had nothing better to do. I knew nothing of what was being discussed. I didn't understand most of what was being discussed about 10 years ago when that happened, but they are some of the most important discussions we can ever have, whether in person or on camera, because our budget is laid out in our budget books, which will be put on the website, and then we will discuss exactly how the city is going to spend our money and where the money comes from. So while it's not something that's exciting, I do encourage anyone present or at home or somewhere in between to tune in, because those are very, very informative meetings and answer a lot of questions that sometimes I'm asked by general members of the public or even sometimes my family, that all this is public knowledge and we'll review line by line how we're going to spend our money and historically what those previous expenses have been. And before I conclude, I just want to thank our Council Vice President, Ramsey Smith, for covering the last two council meetings, as I had some expected and unexpected major events going on outside of here, so it's been a little bit until I got to make it to a meeting. But again, I appreciate Vice President Ramsey Smith covering the meetings. Any other new business for members of council? Ms. Wahlholm?
Just wanted to make a quick comment. We have had several individuals this evening who attended, some familiar and some new, who made the effort to attend this evening and thoughtfully comment. And this is reflective of your investment in Bethlehem outside of these walls. And I just wanted to thank you for that, for your great good work and for being good neighbors and for following along and for making the effort to come here and share your thoughts and sticking with it till the end. Even those of you who had to leave early, if you're tuning in, I appreciate it. Thank you all. And also, a number of comments were made tonight from the administration around your efforts to communicate with residents of Bethlehem. And I think perhaps residents of Bethlehem are still getting accustomed to having their opinions solicited so frequently and so wholeheartedly. And I know that those numbers will grow. I attended the We Build Bethlehem presentation. I appreciated it very much. And you know, I know a relatively small segment of the population responded, but it still was a good number, and I just appreciate the thoughtful and intentional ways, a multitude of ways in which you're making the effort to hear from residents, and that it's clearly something you don't intend to give up on, and it's very much appreciated, and that you make an effort to communicate things that seem overwhelming or intimidating, and make sure that they're being spoken and shared in as accessible ways as possible, and learning all along as you do. So thank you for that.
Any other new business from members of council? I'll start with Ms. Kulika.
Just quickly, Ms. Wilhelm sort of took the words out of my mouth in terms of everyone who showed up tonight to speak about things that they care about. Thank you. Please keep coming and sharing your thoughts. And also, this was a really interesting period of time between meetings, because we had the We Build Bethlehem presentation and we had the Halloween parade. And I sometimes joke that I ran for office because I wanted to walk in the Halloween parade, so it was certainly one of those dreams fulfilled, but it was a bookend to the incredible work that's going on in terms of the We Build Bethlehem project, in terms of addressing homelessness, addressing housing affordability,
using the American Rescue Plan funds in the most responsible way possible. And if you can, if you haven't had a chance to read the presentation, please look especially at Ms. Collins' presentation about funding streams. Because I think the most important thing we have to keep in mind about the American Rescue Plan funds is that they are one-time funds, but what we want to do needs to last for the next generation and beyond. And so looking at how we can do the things we want to do and sustain them over long periods of time is the most important piece of that I took away from that. So thank you for that. And my phone was buzzing so much, I have a feeling the Phillies are doing really well, but I'm not sure, and I just want to go home and find out, so that's all.
Francie Smith?
I just want to say, we had said at the last meeting, I just want to say now that you're here, President Colon, a huge congratulations to you and Aaron on the birth of your daughter, and welcome to parenthood.
Say a prayer for me. Any other new business? Thank you, everyone, for coming out. This meeting is adjourned.
I'm not kidding. My son just said,
it's her night. Yes.
My dad just texted me, my boy Harper. My dad looked
like my best friend's like, I told you, I predicted it. And then he's like, oh no, it looks like you're in a meeting.
Dave Backenstowe just texted me Harper with only exclamation points.
Yeah, so.
I cannot believe of all nights, too.